Welcome to Madlit Musings, the podcast where we dive into the minds of authors, exploring the profound realms of faith, social issues, and the delightful world of entertainment. I'm your host, Jamie Jill Wright, and on this literary journey, you never quite know what you're going to get. Hey there, Madlit enthusiasts. Our podcast is sponsored by the esteemed Baker Publishing Group. Whether you're into heartwarming romance, gripping suspense, or deep dives into matters of faith and society, Baker Publishing Group has it all. With Revell and Bethany House Publishers under their umbrella, they bring you a diverse array of books that will captivate your mind and stir your soul. Check out all of their line at www.bakerbookhouse.com. Hi, everyone. It is Jamie Jill right here with Madlit Musings, and I'm excited because we have Rosanna White back. Yay! I'm excited to have you back because we're also here to talk about book two, A Noble Scheme in the Imposters. Is it trilogy? I know I've asked you that before, but I can't remember.
I write trilogies. That's just what I do. Yep.
Okay. I kind of thought that's kind of the way of the book world now is mostly trilogies. But I do remember the days though, where it was like, you'd start reading a book and you just didn't know how long the series was going to go.
Right. And I've been reading a lot of romantic fantasy lately, and those series can be like a million books long, yeah. And they're all this thick, and it's crazy.
I know.
Come on, people, trilogies. Stick to trilogies. These are doable.
Well, what kills me is if I were to try to write a series, to me, a trilogy is scary enough. But if I had to write a series, like a Game of Thrones that just goes on and on and with these thick, thick pages, like I couldn't keep a track of everything. I'd be like, did I do this angle already?
Yeah. As it is, I do a lot of searching of what color eyes did they have? What was that person's name again?
Right. And then you start talking to people about your new release, like we're going to talk about today. And if you're like me, you have to go back and like, what did I name the heroine? What was the name of the town? What happened in this book?
Again, I wrote that like a year ago.
I don't think readers always understand that when the book comes out to us, it's old.
Right? Yeah. I've finished this series and I'm working on two others by now.
Exactly.
Yep.
So we're going to pick your brain today because we're going to talk about an old to you book, but a new to us book.
Awesome. I have edited it more recently. So.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's great. Well, this one comes out in March, correct?
Yep. That's right.
Awesome. Okay. So it's set in 1909. The cover's gorgeous. The cover is making me curious because it looks like it's very icy outside.
Yes, it is.
It's like that's like there's a lake or something.
It's actually on the southern coast of England. So there are white cliffs like at Dover, though it's not Dover, it's Weymouth. So happily, when I was setting this book, when I looked it up, the weather was snowy and icy all over England. Yes.
Yes.
Plot point, thank you. So, yep.
Well, and it stands out so much on the cover because you don't see snow as much on covers.
Yeah.
It's usually the green in the summer and spring. And I like that this is snowy. So tell us a little bit about what is going on here in this book.
Okay. This is book two of The Imposters. The whole setup of The Imposters is that they are a private investigation firm that caters to the elite. And what no one knows is that they are run by two siblings, which Marigold was the heroine of book one and Yates will be the hero in book three, who are nobility. And these other two members of the Imposters are Gemma and Graham, and they both grew up with Yates and Marigold. So Graham is a distant cousin of theirs who was taken in as a ward when his parents died, and Gemma is the daughter of their former steward. So they all grew up together on the estate, and then when they realized that the estate was bankrupt, they all decided we'll work together to keep things going and, you know, make sure that the retired circus performers who live there now have food for their lion and all that. So Gemma is a journalist. She writes a column for the prestigious London Ladies Journal, basically a gossip column, fashion column. And Graham is an architect who specializes in finding old records for historical buildings and recreating them or reinterpreting them, which comes in very handy for all his imposters work because he can find ways in and out of any building anywhere and find secret passageways and all this really cool stuff. So, yeah, so this
Love it.
story is about Gemma and Graham, who we know from book one have a history, but we don't know what it is until we get into their
Ooh.
story when they're forced to work together to save a kidnapped boy.
Oh, I love it. Kidnapped kids add so much attention to a book. It's a whole other level than like an abducted adult.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
Love that.
yeah, this
Yeah.
poor child was kidnapped because he was mistaken for his cousin, who is the son of a nobleman. He's just
Okay.
an ordinary kid.
Oh.
But so his parents don't have money to pay the ransom. And the mean old uncle, the father of the kid that was meant to be kidnapped, is like, shh, I don't care.
My
So,
kid's fine. Not my problem.
right? Exactly. So the
Oh.
imposters have to get involved to return this child to his parents.
I
Yeah.
love it. I love it. That sounds great. Okay, so yeah, and then I like the last line of the back cover copy where it says Graham must devise a noble scheme to save the boy's life and heal their hearts. So we have Graham and Gemma who really are pretty troubled and tense between themselves when they're starting to work together, right?
Yes, yeah, very much so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you were going to describe Gemma and Graham's relationship when the book opens, like is Gemma feisty or is she timid? Is Graham like the brooding hero?
Gemma is furious with Graham.
Oh.
Kind of cold fury that's been going on for a year. So we know that a year ago something horrible happened and it's all his fault.
Got
And
it.
she does not want to be in the same room as him. And we know that Graham is head over heels in love with Gemma and will do anything to be in her company again, but she just won't have it. So yeah, that's where we are at the start of the book.
I really want to know what Graham did. I really want to know. And you're not going to tell us
Of course
either.
not. You don't learn halfway through the book, you learn. So you have to read.
Oh, halfway through the book. Oh my goodness.
Yep, midpoint twist, baby. That's what we do.
Gotta save them for the midpoint because then you've got the reader completely hooked.
Right.
You kind of have us hooked already, I think, by just this little conversation. Oh, fun. Okay. And so does this take place during the winter then? Back to the snow concept?
Yeah. So I needed it to be over a school holiday.
Okay.
So my choices were Christmas or Easter, and I really wanted Christmas because I wanted to deal with snow and have that get in the way and all of that. And my
Right.
editors were like, but it's coming out in March, so can we downplay the holiday? It's like, yeah. So this is not a Christmas book, though it takes place over the entire holiday,
Right.
into the year and everything. So winter plays a key role, but the holiday is kind of like barely observed because they're trying to find a missing kid. So,
Right. Yeah. Christmas is not top of the list when there's a missing
right.
child. Yeah.
Yeah. So
Okay.
other than like, oh my goodness, this kid is not home for Christmas. But it's not the point of the book.
It. And so you said this is set in Dover area?
It's down in that same area. Part of it is in Weymouth, which is
Okay.
on the southern coast of England. Part of it is not, they go around, they move around a bit because they're
Yeah. Well.
chasing after the bad guys.
Right.
So, yeah, more the Midlands and the southern coast of England. The first book and the third book actually were both set in Northumberland, which is the tip top of England.
Okay.
So, we're just going all over the
You
country in
really
this series.
are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, have you ever been to England?
Once, yes.
Okay.
So, when my third book set in England came out, while I was editing the fourth book that would be set in England, we got to take a trip for our 15th anniversary with the
Nice.
kids.
Night. Well, Yeah,
So,
nice.
yep. So we went to the Cotswolds where the book, it actually released while we were there. So that was really
Oh, cool.
fun. So we went to the Cotswolds and then to Cornwall where the next book was set. And, we hit London while we were traveling basically to Paris. We were in London for like 2 hours and it was too long.
Yep.
But the neighborhood we were in, that was too long.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, so it was one of those great experiences where I learned that I did not mention sheep nearly enough. There are sheep
Oh.
everywhere, and I did not have enough of them. And I had way too many trees in Cornwall. So really glad I got to edit that before
Interesting.
that book came out. There's like no trees in Cornwall.
Really?
It's weird. Yeah. I live in forest, so I'm used to
Right.
trees
Yeah.
everywhere. But no, Cornwall's very bare. So there are groves of trees, but not a lot of them.
Interesting. Okay. So do you do a lot of Google Maps now where you like, or Google World where you like zoom down in to see the satellites?
The best one, the second book in the second English series I wrote was set in Aberystwyth, Wales, and they had great Google Street View maps. And they're not all maps are created equal, right?
No,
But these
no.
were fantastic, and I could take a tour and walk all along it. I could view the hotels, and then I emailed the hotel I was setting it at and was like, "Do you have a back door? Where does it let out? Do you have an elevator? I mean a lift?" And they're like, "Yeah, let me help you. Like, what room would be great for this?" And they're like, "This one." So, people are so helpful. It's amazing.
That's so funny. I never even thought of like actually like emailing the place where you're putting. Of course, I do a lot of fictional places, but where you're, and a back door. I would just assume every place had a back door, but those are good questions.
I couldn't see it in the street view. It didn't go down that alley. So it's like, I need to know.
You do.
Thank
You do.
you for helpful.
Yep. No, and I totally understand back to the London thing. Like I was in a layover in London for an overnight layover, and people go to London and they're like, I want to see this, I want to see this, I want to see this. And it's all about the royalty. And my only goal was I wanted to ride on the top of a double-decker bus. That was like, I have got to do this. It was bucket list. And I did it. I was the only one on top at like 1 o'clock in the morning. It was great.
That's fantastic. Yeah, we spent the night in London so we could catch an early train to Paris. And so we wanted to be close to St. Pancras train station where we were going out of. But, I'm also cheap. So we got a hotel 15-minute walk away, and it was a classic London hotel, which I did not realize meant you share a bathroom with the floor, and there are no elevators, and there's no air conditioning, and it was the hottest day of the year there, which was 85 degrees. So, I mean,
Not terrible, but
not
still.
terrible for us, but with no air conditioning on the top floor of the hotel, it's like, yeah. So that was one of those that we're lying there going, "This is going to be really funny tomorrow."
Yeah,
You know,
right.
this is miserable. It'll be funny tomorrow.
That's the interesting thing too. I mean, not to get off your book and into England, but it is interesting when you go overseas, like the codes for hotels, like our hotels, you couldn't even not have an elevator. Like it just wouldn't be an option. So you don't think when you're booking places that there's places where that is totally fine. Because so much of their buildings are so old.
Or not a private bathroom.
Oh
That's
yeah,
what really
there's
got me.
that too.
Like,
That's a little awkward.
I didn't know that happened Didn't occur to me. Now I know.
Yes,
You
I wouldn't
look,
think that with
classic
hotel.
London hotel. Ask what that means.
Then upgrade if you want a private bathroom.
The extra pounds, you won't regret it.
Yes. Yeah, no, I expected the public bathrooms in the hostels that I was in. So that didn't throw me. But yeah, that would throw me in a hotel for sure. I wouldn't be expecting shared facilities.
Yes.
Just facilities. Okay, so back to your book. We have mystery. And I know we talked about this on our last interview. You don't picture yourself as like a suspenseful, mysterious author. You're more of the romantic bent, but you're always seem to be marketed like mystery. So my question is, are we talking 50-50 romance suspense? Or are we talking 80-20, or what's the ratio?
It's probably fairly close to 50-50, maybe 60-40 toward
Okay.
romance. The romance is what I consider the central part, but it's not what the plot is at all. The plot is always very much a suspenseful or mysterious something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
That's
that's
funny.
what I like to read, but
Right.
it's always a matter of relationship. Oh, plot. I mean plot.
Book has to have a story to it
Everyone over and over.
Oh, the trials of being an author when you realize you need more parts than just one. So that's good. Okay. So you also, with a lot of your books, have like kind of the spy detective espionage element. So I want to ask a little bit about the research that you've done, because a lot of that has been based on actual things I know, like actual agencies and places like that. So what types of research have you done to make sure that that portion is, I don't even know the word, like I want to say legit, but Not the word I'm looking for. Accurate, accurate to
Accurate.
the time and the era.
Yeah. So for these, this is a very unusual detective agency. The fact that they are nobility gives them a whole different, reach than a normal detective would have. So I didn't focus a whole lot on what actual detective agencies did then, but what I did was make sure that they're using technology that existed. And there was a lot, like we don't think of it, but there were voice recorders and there were, microphone amplifiers that were created for people with hearing problems. There were all these things, but they were expensive. But guess who had them? Sympathy. So,
Oh.
like, these people like have access to all this stuff because their parents and grandparents wanted every new thing.
Yeah.
So, they have their Acouphone, which lets them listen in, and they've got, their voice recorder, their wax cylinder recorder. So they have all these fun technological advancements that we don't consider them having in
No.
1909, but they totally, some totally did. And but not everyone would expect it because they weren't common. You didn't just pull out a recorder on your cell phone. So no one
Right.
ever thought someone's going to be listening in on my conversation or recording my conversation because this was not common practice. So it's kind of that edge that they get to have, which is
That.
so much fun. And then I did a lot of research into the things that their cases are touching on. So book one, we dealt with the formation of MI5, which was the first unified intelligence agency England had. And in this one, it was inspired by some of the stuff of the time. There was this era was just huge for reform, and it was huge for reform because things needed reformed. So there were so many things where industrialization was reaching new levels, and it was causing, they needed to put new laws into effect for things like how many hours you can work and how young you can be when you work. And this was an ongoing, progression. So I deal in this one with a very large industrial accident that resulted in death. And so it's not based on anyone in particular. It's just kind of an example of some of the things that society was dealing with at the time of, well, what do you do when you didn't make the improvements you needed to make and it results in an accident and people die? What do you do? What's the fallout of this? So it's just, it's an example. It's a fictionalized one, but it's based on things that people really were going through at the time.
Well, and it's always so interesting too, because you look at history and it's kind of that whole concept of like I see kids like, they can barely walk across the street now without wearing a bike helmet or something, because we're so protective. And I'm like, I used to like ride the stairs down the back of my church, me back like architectural land with no helmet, nothing, no knee pad, nothing. I was like in my dress that would get tangled in the rear tire. I can't tell you how many times I flipped my bike, but there was no like how, and you look at that transition of the past where so much of it wasn't the thought of human protection so much as economic protection and making sure that this stuff was produced and the economy kept going.
Well, we also found it funny when we were in England going through some of the national historical landmarks and like the natural sites, even like the cliffside at Land's End. And in America, everything has safety ropes because they don't want you getting hurt and suing them. In England, there are tiny little ribbons that say, "Don't tread on the heather." Like they're protecting the plants. They don't care about you. Like
You can fly
you
off a
fall off
cliff.
the cliff, they
We're
don't care.
totally okay with that. Just make sure when
England,
you do that you
we
don't
don't
pull
mind. We
the
can't. Yes, but don't crush the heather, darling, please. So, yeah. But, yeah.
Oh, that's so
But,
funny. That's so funny. Yeah, I don't think Americans really, I mean, until you go overseas, you don't really realize how, for lack of a better word, sue happy America really is. Like
yes.
everything is like, oh, liability. Oh, liability. And then the next thing we know, we're walking in these like air pocket sumo wrestler plastic, mat, you
Beneath your bubble.
know.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, I felt that way when I was just another weird cultural thing was when I took an overnight train from, I think it was Switzerland into Italy, if I'm remembering correctly. No, I don't know, it doesn't matter. One country into Italy. And it was middle of the night, and the conductor just walks in to the sleeping compartment. First of all, walks in. I'm like, "Well, hello, Mr. Conductor." What are you doing here at 1 o'clock in the morning? And he's like, passaporte, passaporte, passaporte. And I'm like, huh? And they're like, well, we're crossing. I mean, it was like you're crossing into another country in the middle of the night. So they literally came and took everyone's passports. That was the scariest feeling. Like, I'm gonna get some random passport back. I'm not gonna get my. Where's the US embassy where we are gonna stop? Because I'm gonna need help. You know, all these thoughts that in America, that would never happen. They would
Yeah.
have some sort of something. And it's always interesting to me, just the differences in culture.
For sure.
Yeah. And that has nothing to do with your book either, but it was.
No, it's the different cultural mores and what's going
Yeah.
on.
Yeah.
You know, like something that we also don't think about is that, you know, these kids who are 9 and 10 were working in factories. And that
Wow.
was the legal age when you could start working in a factory, which also comes into play in this book. And so it's like, you know, we're like, when you're 16, you can get a job at a restaurant or
I know,
something, you know, but it's
right?
not like, all right, time to go into the coal mine, time to go into the factory anymore. And, you know, that's just a era thing. You know, it was the
Yeah.
same on both sides of the pond, but
Yeah, yeah.
the difference between 1909 and 2009 or 2024 is so vast in how we treat children and
Yeah.
what we consider a child even to be at certain ages. Just learning about that is always fascinating.
Yeah, and it's crazy too, the types of careers they went into. Like you mentioned, the mines or even the factories. And the factories weren't like factories today either. They were dangerous.
Yeah, and they liked the kids because they could fit their little hands into the machines because that was safe. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, it is interesting. It's just really interesting. It kind of makes me wonder, like, you know, was there a thought process when they had the children go in there? Did anybody actually really stop and think about their safety? Or was it such a common thing to have 8 and 9 year olds sticking their little arms in places that could be bad accidents and nobody
Yeah.
blinked?
Well, yeah. And the thing is, they probably thought that that was being more conservative because it used to be age 6. So, you know,
Oh.
they're progressive, right? Like they're not going to hire anyone until they're 10. So,
Oh, how
and then
kind. How
we won't work
thoughtful.
you more than 12-hour shifts where it used to be no cap. So, you know, this is progressive.
Well, somebody was being thoughtful then. Somebody was thinking,
But at
God.
the same time, you know, that sometimes families really needed kids to be bringing in money because they didn't have enough.
Yeah.
Just,
Well,
yeah.
I think I've discovered the new history lesson for my children that will help them stop complaining when I ask them to,
You
you
think
know,
you have it
fold your clothes and put them in the dresser drawer, or don't fold them, just put them in the dresser drawer. I don't care. I can't do it. You're such a cruel mother. All right, go study 1909. See if it's like it. Oh my goodness. Okay, so we're talking about like the factories and stuff like that. Does that play into the story with the kidnapped boy?
Yeah,
Okay.
there is a tie-in. I won't tell you what, but
You
there is a
don't have
tie-in.
to. I just
There's
kind
a
of
tie-in.
figured. I kind of figured since that was coming up that that was probably going to be a tie-in. So. All right, great. This is good. This is good. Everybody, don't delay. You need to go out. You need to pre-order this ASAP because if you do from Baker Bookhouse, it's 40% off and free shipping, which is literally the cheapest out there.
Ever. Yeah, I sell signed copies on my website, but I can't match those prices.
Don't wait.
I
Oh, I
won't get
probably
you
should.
that.
And you can go to rosannawhite.com.
Yep, you can. This I have it on sale, but she's not that cheap. Like, man, I can't replace
Oops.
them for that cost.
No, you can't. However, that is a cool thing to mention though, because you do have a shop on your website. So tell us a little bit about what you sell there, because it is more than just books,
It
and
is.
you can get autographed books even after they've been released, which you.
Yes. Yeah. And then I might match Baker's price when they don't have the pre-release price on anymore. Yeah, so I sell signed books of all my stuff, and I also have just bookish merch. So anything for a book lover, I've got, you know, bookish tees, bookish totes, bookish mugs, bookish jewelry, all the fun socks, bookish socks. They're so much fun. So I got all that stuff, and then I also have things that tie in with my books. So you know, I had yesterday's Tide set in the Outer Banks, and sea glass jewelry played a big part. So I have sea glass jewelry on the site.
Wow, that's so cool.
And for this series, They have a very circus themed home, and they have peacocks and all this stuff. So I have like some peacock notebooks and all that.
Oh
Peacock
my
earrings,
gosh.
because the peacock feathers are big in what Marigold wears, because she
That's
has an actual fly.
so
So
great.
yeah, so there's always something to tie in with a book in my shop as well.
Yeah, I'm looking through your shop now, wondering why I've ever shopped anywhere else for bookish items.
I don't know. Why have
Because
you?
you literally have like, well, you think of an author's bookshop and you're thinking there's a book and a bookmark to buy, and that's fine. I'm totally fine supporting authors that way. But you like literally have owls on socks with books. How
I do.
cute is that? And they're
They're,
affordable.
not bad.
It's not like $35 for a pair of socks
No,
here.
it's like 10.
It's a 10. Ah, this is cool. Please tell me you don't make all these too.
Oh, heavens,
Okay. Like, as
no.
if you do, I quit. I just quit life.
No. No, I source them from other creators. So
That's so
that's how
cool.
we do it.
Oh, there's a book lover's journal. Okay, I'm getting way off now because I'm looking online. There's a book lover's journal for tracking reads and loans. I need that.
Those are really cool. I haven't actually sold any of those, and they're so cool. Like I said,
Okay, that's wrong. Everybody
yeah.
needs to go to Book Lover's Journal for tracking reads and loans. They're very affordable, absolutely cute. And they come in that little bag that says
Yeah, they have a
loans.
cute little tiny pencil. It's adorable. It really is adorable.
Oh my gosh. And it's got a, like a little ring, like it holds it like a bunch of library cards. Look like library cards.
Yeah, so you can take them off if you're like learning something and you want to put that in the book so they remember who it belongs to, but you can then put them back on. It's great.
Okay. We're going to sell a lot of these, so be prepared.
Awesome.
Everybody needs to go to rosannamwhite.com. Ignore the books if you want to, but just go straight to the shop because there's all kinds of stuff.
Very fun.
Very fun. Rosanna, this was a blast. And you and I
Oh,
could talk for hours, but
probably so.
we'll run out of patience from our readers listening to this podcast. So we should probably quit.
He won't run out of patience. Everyone else might. The kids will be like,
Oh, yeah, they're used to that. They're used to having moms for writers or writers for moms.
yeah,
Oh,
they got
fun.
to feel hard.
Yes. All right. Well, we will have you back for book three, I'm sure. But
Awesome.
in the meantime, everybody race out, get a copy, get book one, too, which was called
A Beautiful Disguise.
A Beautiful Disguise, because you can read them separately, but it's fun to build.
Yep. And cover reveal for book three will be happening in a couple weeks. So,
Ooh, so follow Rosanna White everywhere for that. And you sign up, you have a newsletter too, right?
yep. It's on the homepage, and there's a special, tab for it if you feel like clicking that. But can't miss it. It's everywhere.
That's great. And I will say that, I mean, as a reader, and I'm a reader, I have signed up for a plethora of newsletters. But I will say this, when Rosanna White's newsletter comes through, I actually open that. Not saying that I don't open as many as I can, but that one's like on the top 10 list.
Well, thanks.
So make sure you all are opening the newsletter from Rosanna and Mike because they're always fun. So,
Thank you.
all right. Well, thanks for being on the podcast and we'll talk again soon.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Thank you for joining Mad Lit Musings, where every conversation is a journey and every book is a new adventure. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast player or check us out on YouTube. And let's explore the fascinating intersection of faith, society, and storytelling together.